You're on the Commons. I'm Shuba in New Jersey. Frank, thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, thanks for inviting me. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. We've had a bit of a disappointment recently. I think we all had Bartholomew in joining us on the Commons today. I'm very happy to have Professor Frank Askin. Really high hopes that the New Jersey Supreme Court would find overwhelmingly in favor of the homeowners, and they didn't quite do that, did they?
Well, it was, I must tell you, it was not a total, you know, it was a mixed decision. I'm not terribly disappointed. In fact, somebody asked me the other night, what more could you have gotten out of this case? And I said, I'm really not sure. We won the major argument that we were trying to put forward. That is that the free speech provisions of the New Jersey Constitution do apply to these common interest communities. And that's exactly what the court held, and that any restrictions on freedom of speech and communication had to be justified as reasonable time, place, and manner regulations that left ample alternative channels for communication. I'm not exactly sure what more we could have gotten. In fact, if the decision is read backwards, that is starting with Section 5, the last section, it sounds like we won. The problem is the first part of the opinion is sort of hostile. And in some ways, the two sections are inconsistent and incoherent, which leads me to believe they were written by different hands. I think the opinion is given to Justice Wallace, it's cited to Justice Wallace. I think somebody else wrote Section 5.
Were you expecting a unanimous decision?
No, I really wasn't. I knew there would be some serious opposition to our position. And I suppose this was a compromise decision to make it unanimous. I guess Chief Justice Azzali wanted a unanimous decision. And, you know, I don't know who had the 4 votes and who had the 3 votes, but somehow or other they came up with this compromise.
Oh, so you... Oh dear! So there. Okay. So you think there was some kind of a backroom dealing going on here?
Oh, absolutely.
And because you were expecting the decision some time ago.
Yeah. Well, I thought it would probably come down at the point where Justice Azzali was retiring for age reasons, which was back in the middle of June.
Yeah.
And it was held off for an extra month longer than I expected. But you know, that's hard to say. They've been handing down opinions all through, July.
So, what does this mean? What does this mean for New Jersey, first of all, and what does it mean for the rest of the country?
Well, the rest of the country is hard to say. I mean, it is a certainly it is a foot in the door for people, you know, who want to argue in other states that state constitutional free speech provisions do apply in these private communities. So it's a useful precedent in that regard. In New Jersey, I think it'll have a very significant impact, a very positive impact. There are so many of these communities which restrict people from communicating with each other. Where there's not a level playing field for board elections. What the court emphasized in this opinion was that in Twin Rivers, there are very ample channels for free speech. For example, unlike many of these communities, Twin Rivers residents can go door to door, they can talk to their neighbors, they can collect petitions, they can distribute literature to their neighbors. A lot of these communities forbid that. And particularly when it comes to board election time, there is just no level playing field. There's no way people can campaign. So I think it's clear that from now on, there's going to have to be opportunity for a level playing field in elections. Also, the biggest issue that we were fighting in this case had to do with political signs, because my clients like to campaign by putting political signs up. Now, the strange aspect of this case is that the court totally rewrote the sign regulation. When we sued, what the regulation said was you could have one external sign per property, a very small sign, 2x4, either in your flower bed or in a window. The resolution was very, very clear. Somehow or other, the trial court interpreted that to say you could have a sign in your flower bed and a sign in every window. So if you had 10 windows, you could have 10 signs.
This was a resolution, Frank?
Yeah, this was the resolution of the homeowners association.
But can a resolution interfere with a covenant? I mean, wouldn't what you put in your window?
Well, that's a long, long story. The fact is, the original covenant said no signs at all.
Oh, I see.
Some 20 years ago, there was a lawsuit which said you had to allow for sale signs, house for sale signs, one small house for sale sign on your property. So at that point, Twin Rivers Association rewrote their sign rules to say you could have one small sign on your property, and they didn't limit it to house for sale signs, any sign. They said you could have one small sign either in your flower bed or in a window. My client said that was insufficient because you couldn't, if your passers-by couldn't see such signs. One small sign in the flower bed next to the house or in the window was not very visible from the street. They wanted to be able to put it in the middle of the lawn. The trial court reinterpreted the homeowner association resolution so you could have a sign in every window. So if you could have 10 signs, that's very visible from the street.
Okay.
And if that had been the rule in the first place, we probably have never challenged it. That all we wanted was visibility. And if you can have signs in all your windows, that's not a big deal. That'll catch people's attention. I think it's probably unaesthetic. I'm not quite sure why they would prefer to have 10 signs in windows and one sign in the middle of the lawn, but that's what it wound up being. So that's what the resolution is. Well, in Twin Rivers, people can go door to door and talk to their neighbors. They can give out flyers under their neighbors' doors. They can put a sign in every window. They said, there's plenty of room for free speech here. So these regulations are not unreasonable. So the truth be told, we want a fairly significant victory. The negative part is that the tone of the first half of the opinion is negative. But I'm saying that there's so many inconsistencies in the opinion, it's like two separate opinions smushed together. But the bottom line is, if they restrict your rights of free speech, you can sue them.
I did get that out of the decision. On the flip side, I mean, they said they sort of left it to the reasonableness of the courts or to the associations, basically.
Go ahead.
The industry attorneys are really crowing. They think this is wonderful. You see, we've always said that the contractual relationship reigns supreme. You give up your constitutional rights as long as they're reasonable.
Well,
and so
they better read that opinion over again. That's all I can tell them. And I assume the CAI is going to explain to them that they're going to have to rewrite a lot of these regulations in order to make it comply with the Twin Rivers decision.
They're going to tell everybody, see, you can do whatever you want because you don't have to worry about it as long as you're reasonable.
I don't think they're going to tell that in New Jersey. I think they're going to realize that they have very strict limitations now on what they can do.
Well, that's good to hear because I know that a lot of people were very surprised. I think we were all expecting, a huge hands-off, get-out-of-the-way associations. You cannot infringe on people's constitutional rights. But who decides what's reasonable, Frank?
Well, the courts will ultimately decide. But the opinion is pretty clear on that. And there's a lot of law as to reasonableness of regulations. I mean, the court is very clear. And they talk about time, place, and manner regulations, and regulations which leave ample alternative channels for communication. Now, those are, words that have a lot of meaning in the law. And when a regulation is too restrictive and does not leave ample alternative channels of communication. I mean, for example, there are cases that say, homes in private streets, a small sign that can't be seen from the street is insufficient. Oh, by the way, you know, in most of the New Jersey communities, no signs at all are allowed.
So what does that mean?
So here they're going to have to allow signs.
So you think
they're going to have to allow some signs now? That's pretty clear.
Well, that's
a lot. My wife and I happen to own two homes in two different associations, and both of them forbid political signs. So now it's very clear that those signs are not going to be enforceable. You got to allow some expression.
I was going to ask you what happens in associations where, because a lot of them will not allow you to go door to door, they will not allow you to meet. They'll have the private cops come and chase you off common areas. They don't want anything under the doors. People say, homeowners.
Well, I think in New Jersey those rules are all now unconstitutional. I'm going to be continuing to litigate the Galaxy Towers case in Guttenberg. Well, that case has been a high-rise condominium. That case has been on hold pending decision in the Twin Rivers case. But the big issue in that case is that the residents are not allowed to knock on their neighbors' doors or slip flyers under their neighbors' doors. I think that those rules are probably now unconstitutional. So we will continue to litigate that in the Galaxy Towers case.
Okay, that's been on hold because I've been hearing from people in the Galaxy Towers saying, you know what, we've got this case, it's sitting here, we're waiting to go on
right.
it, and mm-hmm. Professor Askin is litigating it for us. In fact,
right.
a lot of them sent me links and asked me to place them on my website.
Right.
So that's coming. Have you done anything with that case, or?
Well, the case has been sitting. We finished, all the discovery. It's been a lot of pretrial work done. We were just waiting for a Twin Rivers decision. That will now proceed. Now we'll probably have, at some point, cross motions for summary judgment, I suspect.
So you don't have a court date for that? You don't know?
No, the next court date will be a scheduling conference, which is now listed for October. It's been postponed many times, and now it's scheduled for October.
So we're going to be watching that one very carefully.
Yep. Yes, we will.
And you'll be back to talk about it, right, Frank?
I'm sure. All right.
I forwarded you some of the stuff that, some of the discussion, the patter out there on the Twin River case. And you've had, of course, I've sent you everything that I could lay my hands on from the industry's perspective.
Mm-hmm.
What can homeowners do? Because the industry's already saying this is, and I've got Bob Diamonds with me, it's a clear win for the homeowners here, for the associations.
They read the first 25 pages of the opinion. They should read the rest of it.
It says, all in all, Twin Rivers is a victory for community associations.
Well, I think it's a victory for free speech, very frankly. Yeah, that's in New Jersey. I can't tell you whether other state courts are going to follow suit. New Jersey has been a leader in it. I mean, the truth be told, the New Jersey Supreme Court did trim its sails a little bit. The appellate division opinion was much stronger in that regard. The appellate division opinion, latched onto the earlier New Jersey Supreme Court opinions, allowing free speech in shopping malls and et cetera. And it was a stronger opinion on the free speech side. This opinion, emphasized the reasonable regulation side. Although, remember, the appellate division did the same thing in this case. All the appellate division said is, yes, free speech principles apply in these communities. And then they remanded the case to the trial court to decide whether the particular regulations at issue were reasonable or not. So we really didn't win anything more in the appellate division than we did in the Supreme Court. The difference was in the tone of the two opinions. The tone of the appellate division opinion was Constitution, free speech, these are constitutional actors. The tone of the Supreme Court opinion was sort of the opposite. Well, these are private associations. People come in here. They have some contracts. They have obligations to each other. But the Constitution does apply when it comes to free speech. So, as I say, the two opinions are sort of, they almost come to the same result, but from much different rhetorical positions.
We're talking to Professor Frank Askin. He's a professor of law at Rutgers University in New Jersey. He's also, you also founded the Constitutional Law Clinic, and
right.
you've handled a lot of cases, a lot of constitutional cases with your students
right.
in New
That's
Jersey.
Great.
And you've been winning, and you've been protecting rights of individuals and homeowners, and for that I want to thank you, Frank. You're a sweetie.
Appreciate that.
I'm sort of at a bit of a loss here. The associations, all right, you know, they rely very heavily on the contractual obligations, and
right.
they talk about that. There's one thing that, for some reason, the courts refuse to sort of accept or seem to refuse to understand, and that is the mandates that you have. I mean, that most
yeah.
places have these mandates. So it's not something people are going out
right.
seeking. And they're not saying, look, I want to give up my constitutional rights. I want to live under the thumb of some wacky
yeah.
regime. They're sort of almost forced into it. And I would think that
yeah.
that would should constitute state action.
Yeah, state action is a very complex issue, but I wish the New Jersey Supreme Court had really acknowledged that fact that there's not much free choice around. That's a very significant issue. People are almost forced to buy homes in these communities with governed by these association boards. The law almost mandates it.
They do.
And particularly in a number of states. It's getting more and more true in New Jersey. It's true in a lot of states. The other thing I should say about the case, let me take the negative aspect of the case. It's a negative everywhere. And that is, while the opinion, I think, provides important rights for homeowners, there is no mechanism for enforcement of those rights. That's the biggest problem. I mean, you know, there are thousands of these associations in New Jersey now. They forbid you, you know, unlike Twin Rivers, you can't put up any kind of political sign up. Unlike Twin Rivers, you can't knock on your neighbor's door and collect a petition. The problem is, who's going to enforce those rights? I can't enforce them all. I'm not a one-man army. You know, my students and I occasionally can take a case. But, you know, we'll take a couple test cases every once in a while. But for most people, they got to go out and hire a lawyer. There aren't other lawyers who are going to do this pro bono, or not many. I have a couple colleagues in New Jersey who may do a little of this. The local Appleseed affiliate in New Jersey may take some of these cases. In fact, they're doing one now up in Radburn in Fairlawn, New Jersey. But for most people, they got to go out and hire a lawyer. Now, is it worth them paying $5,000, $10,000, $15,000, $20,000? To hire a lawyer in order to win their free speech rights. That's a problem. I wish that we had a way of fee shifting on these cases in New Jersey so that if you won these cases, at least the lawyer could collect a fee from the defendants. Unfortunately, they can't under New Jersey law. So you gotta bear your own. In fact, if you sue your association, you don't have to pay your own lawyer. You're really paying the lawyers who are working against you.
That's right.
But you have to pay your share of the fees for the association's lawyers. So you're paying for the lawyers for both sides. So there's really an immense need for some kind of legislation to provide a mechanism to enforce these rights. I mean, I would like to see New Jersey give the New Jersey Public Advocate that authority to step in here. Now, there are some bills in the legislature in New Jersey which would do that. Unfortunately, they're not moving. There's a homeowner's bill of rights, basically, you know, supported by Senators Shirley Turner and Ron Rice. But that, you know, is opposed vigorously by the CAI. They don't want that. And the CAI has all the political muscle. The CAI wants its own bill, the UCOA bill. Or nothing. They prefer either that or nothing. And that's where the political clout is. So it's a real problem how to find some kind of enforcement mechanism for these rights. That's the biggest problem. And there, I don't know what to do unless the legislature does something worthwhile.
That is a problem. It's a problem everywhere. And the real tragedy here, Frank, is that the people have the power. They're just not using it. I think they've been scared and intimidated.
Well,
and so many
you know, CAI is an organized community. They got all kind of money. Every association, you know, pays its dues and fees. The homeowners are unorganized.
That's true.
They don't have a base of financial base for most, and most homeowners are pretty apathetic, the truth be told.
That's what I'm talking about.
you know, there's a lot of apathy.
Yeah.
So, how you go out and organize, you know, the mass of homeowners to get together and fight for rights, which a lot of people just, you know, aren't terribly interested in. They're just looking for a place to live. They're looking for a place to sleep. They come to these communities, they couldn't care less about a lot of these rules. It's just a place to hang their hat. So it's only the people who care strongly about these issues, the people who decide that they don't like the way the community is being run, they want to run for office, and then they find that the rules for elections are stacked against them, and it's hard to run for office. You can't put up a sign, you can't go door to door, you can't collect a petition. In order to do so, you got to go find a lawyer. To sue to enforce your rights. And I'd say once in a while they'll come to me, and once in a while I'll take one of these cases. But, you know,
Do you get a lot of people calling you?
I get all kind of calls all the time. I get a couple a week. There's very little I can do for them.
And yet if you look at the CAI polls, they say, you know, 98% of the people are so happy.
Yeah. Well, of course, they sponsor these polls. They decide what questions to ask.
Oh, I know.
They refer to a Gallup poll, which they, in fact, commission.
Oh, well, that was the tag-on poll. The Gallup poll was the tag-on poll, and they talked to a grand total of 401 people. I get more than 401 people contacting me. And more, you know, and all of the other advocates, and I know that you get a lot of people because I've heard from some of the people, you know.
Right.
I took my case to Professor Askin and he couldn't take it.
Right.
So I know that it's a big problem. I think when I started doing all this, Frank, about 20 years ago, people were terrified of contacting their legislators. And when I talked to the legislators, they said, well, you know, this is what the homeowners wanted. Because the only people they ever heard from were CAI.
Right.
And CAI would go say, we're here, we're speaking on behalf of the homeowners. And the homeowners were too scared to say, hey, this isn't what we want.
Right.
They were isolated and sort of put apart. But that's changing. And it's not going to take a whole lot. It's just going to take sending an email or making a call to your legislator saying you've got to do something about this.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the more people who call in, the more the legislators are beginning to understand and realize there is a significant problem here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let's hope so.
So, yeah, now if they would just do that, would be okay. But you're right, because, you know, they say you've got to have reasonable standards. And when I asked you at the beginning of the show, who decides what's reasonable? Well, you've got to go to court, right?
Yeah, that's correct. That's right.
In the decision, I guess they said, what would have happened with the decision had there been a total ban on signs, or a complete and total ban on knocking on doors, you know, if you were sort of kept apart from the neighbors, how do you think the...
we would have won. I don't think there's any question about that. I mean, this decision is very clear. Twin Rivers is lots of room for... There's plenty of free speech allowed. Not a problem. These regulations are not too restrictive.
So, but they still can have regulations.
Oh, yes. Well, we always knew they could. We knew they could have regulations. There's no question about that. They can regulate. I mean, even, you know, municipalities can regulate also. They can have reasonable time, place, and manner regulations. Municipality may say that, you know, it may be they could limit you to one political sign on your lawn. I think the courts would probably hold that reasonable. They'd say if you can't hold any political sign, that's unreasonable. But if a municipality said you could have one political sign on your lawn, not too big, can't be a billboard sign, it could be reasonable as long as it can be seen from the street, courts would probably uphold that as a reasonable time, place, and manner regulation. They might even be able to say can only do it during the last 45 days before an election.
Well, I think they do that now.
3 days after the election.
Yeah, I think they do that now.
Yeah, they could probably do that.
Okay, so they say you can do that. Okay, that you can leave it outside in the front lawn. But what about inside the house? I mean, we're crossing a line here, Frank.
Inside, what about inside the house?
If I were to put an easel, or suppose I were to get signs and tape them to the inside or the back side of my curtains and keep my curtains closed. In every window. Three of them.
In New Jersey, it seems to be okay.
But okay, they said you could do it in every window.
Yeah, well, what they said was that's the Twin Rivers rule, and that's fine.
Okay. All right. So you can do it in every window. Twin Rivers says you can do it in one window.
Well, no. They say Twin Rivers says you can do it in every window. They rewrote that resolution.
They rewrote, but, okay, so that's, all right. Okay, I'm with you. I'm with you. We're talking to Professor Frank Askin. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment, so please don't go away. WBR Fairfax Radio, you're on the Commons. I'm Sue Bartholomew. And on the Commons with us today, we have Professor Frank Askin. Professor Askin is a professor at Rutgers University in New Jersey. He is also the founder of the Constitutional Law Clinic in New Jersey. And he is one of the angels that we have, one of the few angels we have out there who will take all of these cases for homeowners.
I'm not taking them all.
You have taken a lot of them, Frank.
I can't take them all, Sue. I'm one man, and I got a bunch of students, but there's a limit to our resources.
You've taken a lot of cases, Frank. You've done a lot of good in New Jersey. And you've got more cases coming up.
Oh, yeah.
And we're going to be watching that. And that one, what are the specifics of that case? It's just not being able to slide things under people's doors?
Oh, Galaxy Towers?
Yeah.
Yeah, that, well, there's several issues there. That's the big one. Now, there are some other issues. They're interesting issues. I'm not sure where they're going to stand after Twin Rivers. Plus, one of the problems with Galaxy Towers, they keep changing the rules. And it's hard to deal with a moving target. When I first started this case, because it's 4 years ago now, one of the issues we were raising was the use of the in-house television channel. And the fact that they broadcast live their condo association board meetings,
mm-hmm.
and then they re-air it every day until the next meeting.
Oh gosh!
And the board members were using it to promote themselves, and they allowed no public comment at the board meetings. And if anybody tried to speak from the audience, they shut the cameras off. They have now modified the rule, so they do allow some comment from board members. So I now have to rethink how we're going to handle this aspect of the case as. Access to what's Channel 26, and how that relates to the fact that you can't slip flyers under doors. So, for example, one of the problems at Galaxy Towers is the board members denounce you on television, they don't let you reply, and they don't even let you put a flyer under your neighbor's door to reply. So there's almost no means of protection or communication there. So it's the combination of a lot of restrictions on communication among the residents, which add up to restrictive provisions. So the question is, how much of this is unconstitutional? Where will the courts draw the line? How much, if they allow you, for example, if they allow you to put flyers under doors, will that minimize your need to respond on, at a public meeting that's televised in-house? Or if they let you, if they give you free access to the television, does that mean you don't have to need to put flyers under doors? So let's all remember, the key here is there has to be enough access for residents to communicate with each other to get their message out. And the restriction, there could be some restrictions, but they can't be so restrictive, the rules can't be so restrictive that residents can't communicate with each other. So that's where we are there.
With new technology, how do you think this is going to affect it? I mean, I go on the air and I've got a global audience.
Mm-hmm.
I've got people from around the world who tune in and listen. With
but you can't reach, you can't make them listen. That's the problem. With the internet or with whatever we're doing, you can put your message out there, but somebody has to be interactive and tune in. Which is different, for example, than being able to go out and, you know, put a flyer under your every one of your neighbor's doors. You then control your ability to communicate with them. You may have be able to reach them all by internet, but they've got to, you know, tune into your internet message. You can't make them listen. So there's a difference in those technologies that I think create some problems.
Okay, so you don't think the courts are going to sit back and say, well, you know, you don't really have to get permission from the association. There's nothing to stop you from using all the new modern technology that's available.
Well, the associations will argue that, and the courts will have to decide whether that's sufficient or not. I don't think it's sufficient. But, you know, I don't make these decisions. I'm an advocate. The courts, the judges rule.
I just wondered about that because you were talking about the television and, you know, it's closed-circuit TV and people mm-hmm. can tune in and listen.
That's right.
Why not? I know that especially the older people don't have, most of them don't use computers and they don't have access to the internet. So you would be eliminating a sizable chunk of,
right.
Of the community.
Mm-hmm.
Going back to Twin Rivers, one of the big issues was the community room. They
right.
couldn't hold. They could, I guess, they could hold meetings in the community room, but they were charging them excessive fees to make
well,
it.
Well, again, when we started this case, the fee was I can't remember. It was either $500 or $250 to rent the room. Plus, you had to put up a $500 security deposit. Well, in the course of the while the case was pending, they changed the rule and they reduced the fee to $165. Now, I think that was still excessive for a meeting since the room really belongs to everybody. Everybody's paying for this room through their maintenance fees anyway.
I agree with you.
And it always seemed to me the fee should be limited to the sort of the marginal cost of opening the room on a given evening for a group to meet when it would otherwise be closed. And that might mean $25 or $30 for heating or air conditioning, putting up some chairs. So I thought that should be the limit, like $30. The court, apparently didn't want to get, they said, well, they made $165. That doesn't sound too unreasonable to us. That's where that wound up. So in a sense, we did lose that. I would have preferred that they had said they could only charge the marginal cost that it cost them to open the room, but they didn't. We lost on that point.
Well, if the meeting is open to all the residents, I don't see why anybody should have to pay for it. They already do pay for it.
Well, that's a good. Well, we didn't prevail on that point.
Yeah.
I think you're right, but we did not prevail on that.
But here it says that the association had to approve. The type of meeting, was there an approval process?
That wasn't very clear. In fact, the trial court said that they couldn't do that. The trial court actually made them modify the rule, so they didn't really have that kind of discretion.
So they still can use the community room, but they have to pay for it.
Yes, that's correct.
What about meeting outdoors on common property? Is there a problem with that?
Outdoors on common property?
In nice weather. I don't know if they have a park or a lawn or something.
I don't know. I mean, sure, they got lots of parks and playgrounds and things. Could residents gather there? Mm-hmm. That was not an issue in the case. I don't know. I'm not even sure it's prohibited.
Okay.
Because I don't think there's any prohibition on that, as a matter of fact.
Because I have heard from people who say, well, we just met and, you know, there's a little grassy area. And the board president drove by, saw us there, and had the security come and chase everyone away.
Well, that's another interesting question. And again, you know, there's a difference between New Jersey and other states. I can't say what's going to happen in other states. In New Jersey, that might be too much of a restriction on freedom of speech.
Well, I think
although I must say that in this opinion, you know, the first part of the opinion gives the association a lot of control over common areas. So that's a difficult issue, I think, even in New Jersey. That would probably be a tough issue, although I think it's still sort of open.
See, there would be no opening anything up. It's right there. There'd be no utility bills to pay, no chairs to set up.
Right. Mm-hmm.
It would be wide open. And it would seem to me that, you know, if you want to gather someplace there, but, you know, associations, you're right, New Jersey is different, but associations, unfortunately, from sea to shining sea are all the same. They'll all go out of their way if the board feels threatened or the industry attorney feels threatened.
Mm-hmm.
They'll all go out of their way to make sure that the homeowners don't get to meet with each other. When you started off the case, Frank, you said you had, what, 7 or 9 cornerstones?
And some. Okay. Cornerstones?
Yeah, cornerstones of democracy. The first time you came on, you talked about the cornerstones of democracy. That got whittled when you first filed the lawsuit.
You're talking about the issues in the case?
Right.
Oh, all right. Yeah, there were nine counts in the case originally. The major ones were, but you know, I always thought the major ones were the three free speech issues and the weighted voting. We lost that even in the appellate division. In Twin Rivers, they have a weighted voting system. It's really unusual. You vote according to the value of your property. I think in most associations, it's one unit, one vote. Twin Rivers was sort of unique in that you vote by the value of your property. And we challenged that, and we lost that. So that's sort of out of the case. And then there were, you know, some other issues, what I call subsidiary statutory issues. One issue they immediately gave up on, that you couldn't audio tape board meetings. We challenged that, and they rescinded that resolution. So now in Twin Rivers, you can tape the board meetings. We won that one right off the bat. We had an issue about access to documents, which sort of got lost in the, because of the, forest for the trees. It sort of got, omitted the time the case went up, and it was never very clearly decided. We thought that there was too much restrictions on access to documents, under New Jersey condominium law. Which allows access to governing documents. But the issue was never very the trial court muddied the issue, and it never really got resolved to any significant extent. We won, which was whether or not a board member, they could censure a board member giving information to her constituents, trying to throw her off the board. We won that issue, and that was sort of out of the case. Then there was an ADR issue early in the case, which was a complicated ADR issue, which we lost, and I don't think there was any way to win it, because what we were seeking was ADR over a common assessment. It had to do with a $3 a month charge for cable access, even if you didn't want cable. Everybody was charged $3 a month for the cable access, and my clients wanted ADR on that issue. But it is a common assessment. You can't get ADR on common assessments. That's pretty clear. So we lost that issue. So anyway, you know, some of these issues just sort of fell by the wayside along the way. Some we won, some we lost. The three remaining issues when we got to the Supreme Court were the signs, the community room, and access to the community newspaper.
So those were all, okay. Those were all basically your free speech issues,
right? And you know, and the opinion was, well, in light of all the avenues for communication in Twin Rivers, these regulations aren't unreasonable.
Oh boy, I guess none of them live in associations, do
they? No, that I can't tell you. I really don't know where the members of the New Jersey Supreme Court live.
Well, I usually, whenever I have industry members on, I always ask them if they live in an association. And 9 times out of 10, they say no.
Well, I do.
I know you do, but the advocates.
But I don't like to mow the lawn. I live there because I want somebody else to mow the lawn.
That's not a good enough reason, Frank. No, but then I get, and then I just get inundated with emails from people. How dare these people advocate for associations when they don't even want to live in them themselves? One of the questions I have, and I was sort of reading a bunch of stuff here, they talk about property, you know, weighing your right to free expression and property rights. And so the decision came down to balancing the two. How can you enjoy full rights to your property if any of your speech rights have been curtailed? I mean, somehow it doesn't sound like you could really enjoy your property.
Well, again, the question
is it reasonable?
Are the restrictions reasonable? And I'm saying even in private homes, municipalities can have reasonable restrictions on the time, place, and manner of expression. For example, the town can say you can't knock on your neighbor's door after 9 o'clock at night.
That's your neighbor's property.
Yeah,
I'm talking about your property.
I'm saying, can they say that somebody can't knock on your door after 9 o'clock at night? No, I don't think they can say that. As a matter of fact, there's another aspect of the opinion which we really haven't talked about, and it's a little bit obscure as to exactly what the court means. They talk about due process. The court, and here, let me see if I can find that section of the opinion. What did I do with it here? It's on page 20. Page 30 of the opinion, and here it says, limitations are clearly not an untoward interference with or confiscatory restriction on the reasonable use by plaintiffs on their property to implicate due process standards. And before that, they say, the private property owner is protected under due process standards from untoward interference with or confiscatory restrictions upon its reasonable use. Now,
what does that mean?
I don't know exactly what it means.
Okay.
But remember, here we're talking about, here they're clearly talking about your own home.
Okay.
What you can do in your own home. And and it talks about unreasonable restrictions on the use of your own property. For example, I mean, I can think of associations, they might have regulations that say you can't have an overnight guest without registering them. Suppose they said that. Can they do that?
Some of them do that.
I think that in New Jersey, I think that would be the denial of due process. I think that would be an unreasonable restriction on the use of your own home. So, suppose they said you can't have liquor in your home. That's probably an unreasonable restriction on the use of your own home. So there is this language here that does recognize, even in these associations, there's a strict limit on what they can do to restrict your use of your own house, your own dwelling. And I think that's significant. At this moment, I do not know exactly how far that's going to extend, but we'll have to see. For example, I'm thinking of this. There are communities, age-restricted communities, adult-restricted communities, somebody has to take a grandchild into their house.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, some of these associates, you can't do that. Well, I don't know. Maybe that's an unreasonable restriction on the use of your property, denies due process. I'm not really sure, but I think that's arguable. So this may not be an insignificant piece of the opinion. They sort of throw it off. It was never really raised by the parties. But they do say, they're in talking about how much protections people have from unreasonable actions by these boards, that not only are your free speech rights protected, but that you have due process rights against unreasonable restrictions of your own property as opposed to the common property.
Is there any way of getting that clarified by the court?
No.
There's no way. So
that's not the way courts work. No, somebody else will have to take another case sometime and say, well, in Twin Rivers, the Supreme Court said this, and we think this is what it means. And then we'll have another case.
So as Galaxy Towers maybe can get that, because I haven't had a chance to read the case, the opinion yet, but from everything.
Oh, you have to read the opinion too, but start about page 28.
Start at page 28?
Yeah.
Because one of the big complaints is that it's really it's not very clear.
No, it's very obscure, to tell you the truth. It's incoherent. And that's because I think we have two separate opinions pushed together.
So you would have been right, because you thought that you would get a split decision.
No, I thought I was sure there would be some split. I was hoping maybe we could get a 4-3 affirmance of exactly what the appellate division did. We'd have then had three dissenters. So I don't know. Maybe this is better. Maybe it's better to have a unanimous opinion, which in fact recognizes all these rights in the homeowners. And that may be why we have a wound up with a unanimous opinion, and why our strongest supporters decided to go along with it this way.
That's interesting. That makes me feel a whole lot better, Frank, because from everything I've been hearing, it's like, oh gosh, this is it. It's the end.
Well,
we've lost everything.
Well, the problem is the newspaper reporters they start to read the opinion, and they get a fixed perspective. I almost did the same thing. I read the first 28 pages. I said, my God, this is horrible. We lost everything. And the first reporters who called me, I was sort of negative. And then I kept reading, and, oh, my God, no, this is quite different. I had to call the reporters back to try to straighten them out.
Have you written anything on it?
Oh, yes. By the way, all right, if you go to my blog,
okay.
I have a blog which appears on what's called njvoices.com, NJV, capital, then little OICES.com. This is run by the Newark Star-Ledger. And if you go to njvoices.com, and you go to on the left, there's a download menu of writers, and you click on that, and you click on my name, which is the third or fourth from the top. Since I'm an A, it'll go to my own blog, and you look down from. And right now, it's probably the top item on my blog. It says Twin Rivers Homeowners Association case, a mixed decision. And there's my analysis there.
Well, I'm going to link that.
Okay.
Put a link from my website.
Okay.
Onto that, so that people can just click on it and go there and get that information.
Okay.
Because this has put a whole different perspective on everything that I've been reading. The decision came out, Frank, my phone started ringing off the hook. Oh, what are you going to do about it? What can we do about getting some publicity, and how are we going to turn this around? And this is absolutely awful. So thank you so much for taking the case, but for putting it in the proper perspective.
Okay.
Because, like I said, it doesn't sound like it's a total wash.
No, in fact, in some ways it's a total win. But maybe the question is the glass half full or half empty.
And so, well, that's,
maybe you have to be an optimist. It's a question whether you're an optimist or a pessimist.
And you're an optimist. Well, I kind of like the bit in there about your due process rights, and it mm-hmm. sort of seems to be kind of gratuitous from what you said. It's just kind of tossed in there.
Mm-hmm.
And what's the opposition saying? What's Twin Rivers said? Anything?
Well, actually, Barry Goodman and I spent an hour on National Public Radio yesterday out of Philadelphia, WHYY. And it was sort of interesting. I mean, he says, well, we want that Twin Rivers won. And in a sense, they did win because their regulations were upheld. But he agreed with me, for example, as well, if there are communities that don't allow people to go door to door and talk to their neighbors, that's probably unconstitutional in New Jersey. He agreed with me on that. Okay. Or if they don't allow any signs at all, that would be unconstitutional. So, you know, it was sort of a, but he was, but, so the biggest disagreement we had was who won, in the sense of who won the big battle, because he wants to claim victory, and I'm saying basically that we won on the, what I consider the overriding issue. We lost the battles, but we won the war.
We won the war, huh? And as long as it's reasonable, and we have to go back and let the courts decide what's reasonable, right?
Right. That's correct.
That's the downside.
Well, but there's nothing else to be done. I mean, that's true everywhere.
That's the
it's
downside.
It's true of all regulation of speech, even in the public context. It's a question of what are reasonable time, place, and manner regulations.
Frank, thank you so much.
Well, it's always a pleasure talking to you, Sue.
It's always fun having you on. And good luck with Galaxy Towers. We will be following that. And we hope that it's a resounding win.
Okay.
And maybe you can figure out through Galaxy Towers what the justices meant by this due process, right?
Well, I don't think that's going to be relevant in Galaxy Towers. I'm not sure. I don't think it will be, but we'll see.
They might toss it in there just for the heck of it. You never know.
Okay.
Thank you so much, Frank.
Sure. Bye now.
Bye. And thanks to all of you for joining us on the Commons. And if you'd like to listen to this show again, please check it out on my website at www.onthecommons.us. The archives of the shows are at onthecommons.net. We also have a wiki at www.onthecommons.info. Help us build a wiki and help us have an entire body here of information from your perspective on homeowner associations. Don't let the other side have the entire agenda. On the Commons was produced by OTC Multimedia Productions. See you all next week.
Well, I finally bought my dream home to enjoy retirement life. I've made new friends and buddies, lots of parties for my wife. It seemed that life was perfect, all my neighbors felt the same. Then along came death by CCRs. Life's over, I'm fair game. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos. Someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Now there's lots of open meetings closed to justice for HO. Those arrogant board members say what they want you to know. The CAI and ULI will help you lose it all. But I wouldn't sell that dream home yet, the writing's on the wall. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Well, we're not not afraid or stupid. All your threats mean nothing here. Time marches on, soon you'll be gone. United, we'll be there. So put your rules and CCRs up where the sun don't shine. And enjoy those precious golden years. Stop messing around with mine. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers, slither clothes, but they won't tell. Why our dream home should remind us, we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Why our dream home should remind us, we bought a one-way ticket to hell.